SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three at the races. The skies are lightening up here, but it's too late. That downpour was fast and pretty extensive. I mean, it was banging against the windows here pretty good. But now I can see standing water out in the infield. So the main track looks good. And actually, the main track, main track might start out muddy. It's going to start muddy. Unfortunately, the way the rain rolled in, they didn't get a chance to seal after I think training was still going on. So they didn't get a chance to seal it, and it was open, and I can see hoof prints and little limpid pools of mud that I think is going to leave it. Although the 4, 5, 6 path looks pretty good, so I'm gonna guess they'll start muddy, but I think you'll be good pretty quickly here, we'll see. Maybe that nice soaking rain, and it's supposed to be some rain here the next couple of days. So maybe by the time racing resumes later in the week, that inside conveyor belt turf course, maybe that'll have alleviated somewhat. But if you took advantage of it, or were on top of it for Friday, Saturday, you did okay. Johnny D had to get to Johnny because Johnny. Good morning, first of all.
Good morning, Stevie. What a minutiae detailed weather report you just gave us. Talking about the pools and the hoof print.
The lipid pools.
Lipid pools, I'm sorry. You might want to run down and see if there's any crawdaddies swimming around in there.
There might be some mud bugs.
You never know. You're in the right place for it.
For sure. Well, I had to get to you because we have to review. I mean, we'll talk about other things, but we have to review Beat the Host because all that chest beating by Quigley, it didn't turn out so good.
That's why you had to get to me?
Yeah, oh yeah.
10 o'clock all year long, and then you get a couple of trainers that got lucky over the weekend. What and you move me to the side, toss me in the corner like a rag doll, and the only reason you want to talk to me is because Quigley took the collar and beat the host. what are you going to say? This is a tough game. We all know it. And we all play it, and we love it. And, it's funny. After we spoke last week, I got an email from a listener saying, I'm so glad you said what you said about how difficult the game is and how, streaks, how tough it is. And I replied, yeah, I mean, it's the truth. No matter how good a handicapper you are, and listen, we've had our hosts this year have struggled. There's no other way. I wish we could have put up a better fight for people. I know the players are just licking their chops. They just enjoyed this so much. By the way, Merton Klein, $171, that was the top prize. So people could pick winners. It wasn't like it wasn't possible. Michael Tibbetts, $162, finished second, $750. And Sumner Weinstock, $150 mutual total, $250 prize. Quigley did not do much to diminish the Sweep the Host candidates. We're still facing 68. And it's all, the puck stops here. It's all in Eddie O's corner.
I guess. And in fact, you know, you mentioned 68. That means somebody else took the collar, right? Because weren't there 69 last week? So if somebody also had zero, if they, as you always say, it's beat the host, not tie the host.
Yeah, well, they either had zero or they didn't play.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
I don't know why you wouldn't play, but that's possible. And I didn't check to see who the one person was that didn't move forward. But we're down to 68. That's an incredible number. You think of all the years we've been talking about this. However long the show's been on, that's how long we've been talking about it.
Yep.
And we've gone down to one or two at the end, and none. We've had seasons where no one has whipped the host. And this year we've got 68. So I think it's a great illustration of how difficult this game is. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't play it and you shouldn't try and become a better handicapper and shouldn't learn everything you can learn, because that's exactly not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that you have to alter your expectations. You have to, if you have a job and you have a family and you have things, responsibilities you have to take care of, and you can't play this on a full-time basis, don't become intimidated by people that come on and say things like, just for example, you pointed out that the rail on the turf course at Fairgrounds, you had some guests on Friday who talked about that, and then you just echoed that sentiment because of what happened over the weekend. And, you know, just because you don't know something like that, it doesn't mean that you're at some huge disadvantage. Do your handicapping, pay attention, listen to other handicappers when they talk about what's going on, which, by the way, a tip of the cap to you and all your guests last week. I think they did an excellent job reviewing the races. Listen to those people and try and improve your game, but attack this as a fun thing to do. It's so difficult to attack every pick five, every rainbow six, every pick four. These are difficult wagers to hit. And I'm not kidding, although a lot of people hit the rainbow six Sunday at Gulfstream and Santa, I believe. But these are, on the norm, are very difficult wagers to hit. And so, you know, it's okay to bet to win and place. There's nothing wrong with that. And, you know, enjoy it. If it's starting to aggravate you, back off, take a break, refocus, and realize this is supposed to be, why are you doing this? Are you doing this to aggravate yourself? If you are, it's a tremendous success. I said that to myself so many times. I'm finally a success in my life. But if you're doing it to enjoy it and get to, look, there's nothing is, ask me, there's nothing more fun than handicapping a race, watching it happen on the screen, winning or losing, and then digging back in, you know, and finding the next, picking a horse in the next race, win or lose. It's a puzzle. It's a game. We're doing it for fun. And we'd like to have some profit along the way, and you will. You will have those moments. Just don't expect to have them all the time, because it's really, really hard.
No,
it's
well
really
put.
Hard.
Well put. I absolutely. Absolutely. You touched on, Johnny, a couple of things that you kind of hinted around, and we can slip them all in. You mentioned the weekend, and when it came to what went on at Gulfstream, I should really haven't had a chance yet, and Laurel too. We can hit all the Stronach properties, and at Gulfstream, you had, even before the, you know, it was kind of a quiet day, but there were maiden races that were well worth you know, tuning in for. And whether it was Chancelot that won the third race, upsetting the 3-5 Pletcher, that Fort Worth that was put on the defensive chasing, everybody was chasing, and Chancelot for Navarro and Gelfenstein. This is a Shanghai Bobby, first-time starter, and was very good, but held off Bodie's Express, Gustavo Delgado at the wire. That was the two of them, and Fort Worth disappointed mightily in the debut. But the two, the other interesting horse, Karama. How about Mike Pino getting horses from Rick Nichols and Shea Camdam, Shadwell, the homebred by Kitten's Joy? That filly Karama was very impressive, and I'll reiterate the story between Romero Marat and our visit with Walter Blum Jr., and he has managed in short order. Walter's holding the book for Nick Juarez, and he has gotten Juarez on a bunch of live horses in the last 2 weeks, including this Karama. And Seismic Wave broke through for Bill Mott and Judd Mott. Actually, Mott had a maiden winner here as well. And that was an important race too, because you had the sibling of Azure for Chad Brown and Wise Racing and Mike Ryan. And then there was Blamed for Mott winning wire to wire in the Royal Delta. But the maiden races were really the highlight of that card Saturday.
Yeah, it was an interesting card. I mean, the racing at Gulfstream, you've got a couple things going on there. You've got the quality. You've got the top trainers from New York, certainly. So you've got the upper end of the spectrum. And then you also have lots of wild claiming races on turf. You have maiden races, maiden claiming races on turf. And the mixture produces interesting combinations. When you look at the Rainbow Six, you get your bombs in some of these maiden turf races. You're getting your big upsets, and then you're also having some formal races, Blamed is an example like that. And I thought it was kind of fitting that Mott wins the Royal Delta. I thought that worked out pretty well. And then you've got the battle, the Safi Joseph Navarro, battle where those two are, every time they have a horse in a race, you've got to take, second and third look at whoever it is. I think Navarro won like three, I think. But anyway, it's challenging racing there because you have this mix. And when you're looking, like if as a handicapper, you like claiming races. That's what you like to handicap. You like claiming dirt races. Well, Gulfstream, you're going to have a couple of those in the card, but you're going to have to be a turf handicapper too. And we all know how you have to be lucky in turf races. You have to be a little bit lucky. You have to handicap well, but then you also have to get a little bit lucky along the way. Horse sometimes, ride the rail and then they can't get out into the stretch and they drop down to the rail again and they can't get through and you finish third or fourth. So it's a great mix of handicapping challenges. And there are usually 11, 12, there are plenty of races at Gulfstream for you to, to dig into. I enjoy playing Gulfstream. I enjoy the turf races. I like a mix of some cheap races in there. Certainly I enjoy the quality. Anyone who's heard me on here, I enjoy the quality. But it's a good mix throughout the card, and you've got to be a versatile handicapper. And, as going along with what I said earlier, maybe you shouldn't play every race that comes along. The ADW world, it's been my world for 25 years since it started. I've worked in the ABW world.
Well, since you invented the internet.
Well, that was before the ABW, actually. Then I went into the ABW business. But, and look, I'm speaking from personal experience here. When you go back, when you used to be at the racetrack, like in the, let's go to the 80s for a minute. I don't want to spend too much time here. The track you were at, that was it. There was nothing else. So you kind of handicapped that track, and your $100 or whatever you had for the day, 50, whatever it was, you betted on that track because you didn't have any choice. There was no place else to bet. The only time you encountered anything else was in my world was in Las Vegas. When you went to Vegas, you had all the big tracks were coming in on the boards where they would slide the board down, and all you'd get was the recreation, the call. So that was it. Then simulcasting came in. You had a little bit more. And so you had to kind of pay attention to a few more tracks. But still, what happened in the East or other parts of the country was, for me in California, you didn't see those races. You had to, you didn't see them. I know that's hard for people now to believe.
Yeah.
Because we have such access. But you wouldn't see big races. What happened in New Orleans? You would, so much so that jockey agents in California, who sent jockeys out of town to ride in stakes races elsewhere, would sometimes go to Vegas because they may be able to see, if their jock was riding 5 or 6 mounts out of town. They'd want to watch him ride, move for him, and pay attention to what's going on. So you go, and he's out of town, so you don't really have any business here in town. So you go watch him compete. Well, fast forward all this time with the ABW. The great thing about it when it came around was that you now were in a position to where you can pick your spot. You don't have to play every race at every track. You can look at 3 or 4 different tracks or one track, whatever you want to do, really. Look for horses that fit the way you like to play, horses you think have a chance, and then play those horses. I don't think most of us do that. I think most of us play 2 or 3 tracks simultaneously, and maybe a doubleheader of roughly 2 or 3 tracks. In other words, you're playing 2 or 3 early tracks, then you're playing 2 or 3 late tracks, and maybe if there's a big race somewhere, you're jumping over to take a look at that, or some kind of a mixture that way. But if you try and play every race at every track, and on those 3 tracks that are running at the same time that you're looking at, and you're playing pick 5, and you're playing pick 4, and you're playing pick 6s, you are going to have some really, really bad days. You are going to get murdered. You're not going to have great days at all of those. You may have a great day at one track, but you're not going to have, great days at 3 or 4 different tracks. Because what happens is you spread yourself so thin that you really don't get the full, get to do one track really, really well. So that's kind of how ABW has changed. People I talk to in my world, now I know some people stick to one circuit, and that's it. They've been able to, just if they play New York, they play New York. Doesn't matter. Horses go to Florida, I don't care. I'm playing New York. California's that way. I know people who tell me if it's not about California racing, if it didn't happen here, I don't care about it. Hey, that's a great way to go. You're going to know a lot more than somebody who hits California's one of six tracks in an afternoon. I can't do that. I need, well, I don't know if I need, but I want to look at other tracks. Excuse me. I enjoy wagering on the races at other tracks. So I wouldn't do that. Stay at one track because I'm not doing this for my living. I have a job that I do the rest of the week. This is what I do for, I mean, it is part of my business, but I do it for enjoyment also.
Sure.
My wagering is for enjoyment. Let's put it that way. Watching the races is for, it's my business, but wagering is for my enjoyment. So I have to spread it out. I have to, and get long story short, or long story getting longer. I think Gulfstream gives you really interesting racing on the weekends on many occasions. Not every time, obviously. Sometimes it gets a little chalky, like yesterday. But I think for the most part, you get a good variety. Now, there's an answer to the question you can bother asking.
I don't remember what I asked, actually, so it doesn't, you know. That's all right.
I love it.
Beyond Gulfstream, we'll work our way quickly to to Southern California. But I got to stop in NorCal, because Johnny, what was your impression of the Camino Real Derby winner? This looks like a horse that's going to. I mean, we got to see, you know, where, you know, things go from here. He's got the one dirt start at Santa Anita, you know, back when he debuted. But I mean, from a pedigree standpoint, there's no reason why he shouldn't be okay on the dirt. And maybe the first start and you know, the fact that he was sprinting, maybe that shouldn't be held against him. Certainly, Blaine Wright's going to have to, you know, look to the next step. I can't wait to talk to Blaine about what looks like a very talented colt here in another Twist of Fate.
Yeah, certainly the colt has talent, the breeding to go on. All the stuff you say is true. As far as looking forward, I mean, at this time of year, and I don't know, as people listen to me, my comments are aimed towards the Triple Crown, because that's kind of what we're all moving towards, and that's where do these horses fit in the grand scheme of things? And the issue I have is I have a couple of issues. First of all, if you're a trainer and you have a horse that can really, really run, I mean a serious three-year-old, and you're going to get on the Derby trail, I think for the most part you stay in Southern California. Because you're going to run against the top competition, and you're going to see what you have. Or maybe you ship somewhere, and maybe to New Orleans, maybe to Arkansas, you know. But
yeah, somewhere.
But you don't. Going up north is a different thing. Northern California, the Golden Gate, because of the synthetic racetrack. And you touched on it as you were speaking. It doesn't really, it's different, you know? It's as different as, I'm going to say it's as different as dirt and turf. I mean, it's different. So I have to leave, my jury has to stay out and gather more evidence, but right now it's looking like this is anybody who wins this race is not in my consideration for the Triple Crown stuff. To be a very nice horse, to win lots of races, I'm not saying that. And because we know this our horse, obviously has talent. But the competition's not as deep. Whoever's up there, it's because the trainer thought they couldn't cut it down south. And so it thins the herd out a little bit for you. It's a great race. The money's there. It's fine, but, you know, it's different.
And that's fair, and you know, it doesn't mean that this, you know, isn't a horse that goes on to be, who was the Who was the nice Hollendorfer? Was that Chocolate Ride? Did he win this going back a few years? You know, there's horses that have come out of it that, you know, that are okay. I mean, I got enamored with Frank Conversation coming out of this. I didn't like, you know, what they did, sending him to Dubai was silly. But eventually he proved out, you know, a very nice stake horse and on the turf. So, I mean, there are horses that have come out of this that have been very nice. There was the wonderful Meta Boss, who was a great story. You think about him. So, it wasn't Chocolate Ride. It was Candy. It was Chocolate Candy that I'm just pulling up the, you know, but there's been some very solid, horses and actually some great stories, out of the El Camino Real. But this might be,
I agree 100%.
The Philly won last year.
You know what, though? And we touched on this just a bit. The surface, it's very difficult for a horse to be as good on one surface as he is on another. And I say that all the time. When you find them, and there were a couple this year, can't think of their names off the top of my head. Jonathan Thomas, this 3-year-old.
Catholic boy.
Yeah, he was good on turf. He was good on dirt. Very unusual. And he was excellent on both, actually. Very unusual to find. And the same is true with the synthetic. It seems like if they like one, it doesn't mean they can't run on the other and be successful and do well. It just means one is preferred over the other. That's all.
Well, we'll keep an eye, and we'll look forward to talking to Blaine Wright. Let's also slip in what went on at Santa Anita as well. And Johnny, Santa Monica, Marley's Freedom. And, you know, not anything, you know, surprising by any means with that effort. There was, however, and it's funny because when Cassie mentioned that he's got Wonder Godot working at Oaklawn, it prompted me to remember the opener at Santa Anita on Saturday when John Shurriff's, who, you know, those who remember John Shurriff's early in his career, nobody used to tune up a first-time starter for battle like John Shurriff's. So even though the late career John Shurriff's isn't known as a first-time specialist, he knows how to do it. And the sister, the Hardspun sister, Hard Not to Love, a winner upon introduction with Tiago Pereira in the opener at Santa Anita. That was certainly one of the notable performances. We'll see where he goes with that filly. And there was also Maxim Rate later on. Simon Callahan again. Simon Callahan, he's another guy that gets him ready. Slam Dunk Racing's Maxim Rate, an exchange rate bred by Hertrick and Fielding.
You know, it's funny because you mentioned John Shurriff's. I mean, he's one of those guys that everybody knows he can train. There's no question about that. We've done it, you know, for decades with grade one winning horses. But first time out, I mean, I think you have to work with what you have. And sometimes, you know, a trainer like you had Mark Castellon, winning first out, it's not something that he really cares about. He said that on your before. He said that on your show. We know. Trying to think of another great. Well, Bill Mott is actually an example. And when they do win first time out, I mean, it just shocks everyone. and it has to do with a great deal of the stock you have and how you prepare the stock you have, but if you don't get those precocious runners, and if your owners are not the type that are looking for those kind of runners, if they're looking for, you know, distance horses, turf horses, And once you become the kind of trainer who trains Zenyatta and other champions or other big grade one race winners, people don't think of you as first time out winning trainer. It's just, unless you're a speed trainer like Baffert would be, an example of a guy like that. So anytime, and John Sheriff is having a fantastic Santa Anita meet.
Yeah,
well,
he is.
No one should be surprised. You know, we know he can train, but everyone's surprised because he's winning races on a daily basis, which that hasn't happened in a while. But it's great to see that he's got enough stock and finding the right places for them and hitting all the right notes with what he has in the barn right now. Because we certainly know he can train, but he surprised some people this meeting.
Yeah. And you think back to the days when he was the 505, right? The 505, and they would produce precocious types, and John would get them to ready to win early. So,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's the stock you have, and what your owners. You know, everybody used to say about Frankel. Well, he never has any 3-year-olds. That wasn't his game. That wasn't what he did. It wasn't what his owners.
Yeah, they weren't the kind of horses he was getting either until Empire Maker.
Exactly.
Now, Johnny, I do want to get a couple other quick hits in here, and I want to grab John Dooley, too, before I leave town. So we got just a little bit of time. Let's go very quick. We got to stress Friday. Finally, after 2 months plus, finally, the carryover that you've been waiting for in the Stronach 5 on Friday.
Well, we had another one earlier. I think it was 88,000, but this one's the big one.
This is the real thing.
That's gonna juice things up incredibly. This thing is frustrating me. I mean, I look at it every week. I play it almost every week. This week I looked at it and I thought it was tough, but it was past tough. It was impossible. So let's hope that this week is a little more tame. I mean, this past Friday, he had a $22 winner, Gio Pronto at Santa Anita. He had an 89 winner at Gulfstream off the mark. And then you had a $140 winner, Shari, at Golden Gate Field. So anybody's going to put those together, and obviously no one could. I thought it was difficult going in, and it was impossible coming out. But
Well, tomorrow, look for the press release with the races that will be involved. And then finally, at Laurel, the 3-year-olds, Always Mining, came back again for Kelly Rubley. How about Las Setas and Voss and Manfuso? And nice win in the wide country. Bonus points for Pletcher in the Campbell. But then in the graded stakes, I'll tell you what, late night powwow.
Yeah,
This is a serious, she is... You got to sit up and salute what's going on with her.
A West Virginia bred who owns Charlestown and is now taking her show on the road to Laurel. Wow, I agree with you. She's something else. And which watching her kind of just twisted my mind a little bit about Winx. 30 consecutive victories. I don't care who you're beating. If you're going out there and you're going to run 30 times and win all 30 races on the turf with a closing style like she has, and most of the time, I mean, she's breathing and come back year. This streak extends over what, 3-4 years? I mean, this is not an all in 1 year thing. I am so amazed by her. So amazed. And I was also amazed by Uncontested, who freaked out in the General George, and he went fast, and then he went faster, and those kind of tough to catch.
Well, and you bring up the General George winner, and we'll have to get the opportunity as soon as possible to talk to Jennifer Peterson and Jen Patterson, excuse me, and she's the girl who, if I'm not mistaken, she was the Shug McGahey assistant that went out.
I think you are correct.
Yeah, on her own, and has done well with just a handful of horses, and last year 17 starters but 4 wins, and this was her first start of the year, and of course Uncontested was originally with Catman, and it's a great high profile win for Jen Patterson, and congratulations to her, and of course Javier Contreras, what he's done with this late night powwow is astounding. I mean, that she's now 11 for 12, and with the second, the only, and that came actually how she got beat in West Virginia before she really, she was really in the midst of this, but she just keeps getting, she not only does she keep winning, she's getting better. Now a 93 buyer, which is a career top. I mean, she's with maturity now, in her 4-year-old season, she's getting better, which is scary. Daughter of Fibersond, who we talked about with Sid back when she won something last year, whether it was the Charlestown Oaks or it was something that she had done something, and I brought up, and Fibersond had he's an Unbridled Song son, and he had some other success, and we were in the midst of talking about Arrogate and Unbridled Song and his sons, and this daughter, boy, is something. So that was your Laurel card, which was a nice card, and that pretty much, I think, other than the two state bred races in New York, we'll get to that. I mentioned the Dixie Belle. Oh, and Friday, Some Like It Hot Brown for Mike Maker, and also a New York bred, as it happens, the Big Brown Son, wins the Battaglia. And of course, there was the upset. We talked about XY Jet tuning up for Dubai. Imperial Hint found himself chasing and couldn't get to Killy Beg's Captain. And of course, those of us in New York, we've watched Killy Beg's Captain for a while. And Sammy Camacho and John Terranova upset the Pelican and Imperial Hint. I mean, that was a stunner. And Heavenly Score also for Terranova, winning the Bombs Between the Minaret, the other stake at Tampa. And Johnny, the only thing else I got to do with you is get your impressions of what happened here in Fairgrounds.
What happened there? I don't know. I didn't watch any Fairgrounds race. Nah, just kidding. War of Will. Well, let's start off with Serengeti Empress. Outstanding. What a great run by her. She is on her game, 100% on her game right now. Yes, she got the lead. She took the lead. There's a difference. And she was strong throughout. Good performance. War of Will, did everything he was asked of him. Certainly a talented colt. The waters are going to get deeper, no doubt about it. And you don't want to peak too early. Has he? Maybe. I don't know. The distances get longer and things get tougher. But he certainly, that was a nice, very nice win. Royland. Boy, if you get a chance to watch this one, he wasn't even at the television screen. You won't even see him until late in the stretch. I mean, he closed a lot of ground in this race. I'm not saying that he's going to be able to win with that style very often, but he's going to pick up a lot of checks and finish a lot of exotic wagers. And I thought Country House finishing second certainly ran okay. So War of Will, great effort, but Stay tuned.
Agreed. And we had a nice conversation, if anybody missed, with Mark Cassie. And if you had seen, I don't know how well the TV does justice to what a horse could look like, but I mean, we'll reiterate that he was, just stunning. And if that gets maintained, I know people were, are kind of scurrying and panning for Derby Gold. I'm not sure why there's uncertainty about what kind of a horse this is, Johnny. I was surprised to, I kind of caught up on some of yesterday and even this morning on some of the, the natterings.
As I said, my uncertainty is just that he might have hit it. He might have hit his best too early. That's my question.
We'll see. I know. We'll see.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. Well, it's been a lot of fun to be here, that's for sure. And at this point, John, just a couple, you might as well play out the string. Today, we should remind everybody, not only is there the pick five, the cross country between Aqueduct and Oaklawn, but the Fox Sports is on today. It's not Saturday at the races. It's President's Day at the races. And in fact, Mike Mulvihill just minutes ago. And of course, you heard from Mike a couple of weeks ago when they were announcing all the additions between Jonathan Kinchin and Gary Stevens and et cetera. And today, 5 to 6:30 Eastern, you going to watch the telecast, Johnny? When there's national broadcast, do you prefer that to just watching the feeds from the tracks?
That's an excellent question, and I want to tell you something. My cable bill, I could put somebody through college with the money I spend on cable, and Comcast here in Philadelphia does not carry Fox 2, Fox Sports 2. So I don't even get it, and I have the I have the Red Zone. I have the, the sports package. I don't get Fox 2. So I looked for it online. I didn't have any success there. I don't know where I can see it. That's my problem. I mean, I enjoy watching your national broadcast when they're on. I put the national broadcast on television, and I keep the races on my, obviously, on my laptop. So, I can double dip for sure, but I can't do it with this.
How about that? It's amazing because I think
it is.
FS2 covers like 70% of the country, and it somehow it doesn't. Philadelphia is what, the sixth largest TV market?
It's pretty big, and I know my bill is like the sixth largest bill in the country.
So great. Unbelievable.
I said, can you help me with this here? They said, well, what's the problem? It's too much.
Oh, so good. All right. Well, there's a lot of racing today, obviously, and the weather here went south, so sorry about what we're dealing with, but Aqueduct and, the 7th and 8th feed into the 7th, 8th, and 9th. That's the cross-country pick five fairgrounds, as we mentioned, and Golden Gate later, Gulfstream, Laurel, Louisiana Downs, Mahoning, Oaklawn, Parks, Santa Anita, and Turf Paradise, and Camarero.
Well, I guess I know what I'm doing today.
Johnny, I appreciate it, and we will talk next week, and I will be back in New York. Back where I belong, I suppose, although these trips are wildly fun and we love doing them.
What a great journey. Have a good time, you and Tina. And, you're going to see some places I have not visited. So let me know how they are.
I will. Johnny DeSantis, everybody. XB Johnny D. And he also joined Tom Amos. And if you missed Tom Amos, either tune in tomorrow morning, 6:15 to 7 05 because Amos. Amos is just unbelievable, just so good. Love having him, and when you have him live, that always is special. Brett Calhoun, and on the occasion of not just Win 3000, but now a couple of other nice winners from Saturday. He's up to 3,002 right now, and Mark Cassie with extensive updates on a bunch of things. We're going to get on the road, and unfortunately, it's just not as nice as we hope. But we're going to work our way into good weather. I promise. We'll be gone the next few days. My wife, vacation, and I. Those of you that are married, I don't have to explain to you. Listen, it's taken 8 years. 8 years it took for her to get me to do this. We'll take the next three. So we'll have some entertaining best of for you Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and we'll do weekend preview on Friday. Thanks, everybody.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people, 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, "Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," we were the ones at the docks helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda. The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary. Why? Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hyas, for the refugee.
Visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of Hyas.